5525 Higher Ed Capital Construction. Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If I may just take a few minutes as an introduction, I'd like to sort of set the stage for this bill, which you'll be holding hearings on both today and tomorrow. What Senate Bill 5525 does is it contains legislative approval of capital construction projects for the Department of Higher Education, the Oregon University System, for a number of projects. A number of things to note about capital construction is that capital construction is funded quite differently than the operating expenses of higher ed, which you've been looking at it or have looked at when you did Senate Bill 5524, the operating budget bill of the department. The Constitution requires, state Constitution requires, that capital projects be approved in a separate bill from the operating budget. So that's why there are two separate bills, and it comes to you in that format. It's also required that the legislature approve each specific project. So if you look at the bill which has been distributed to you, you'll see that that actually lists each project separately. So the capital budget does approve each project separately. If I may, Mr. Chair and members, refer to a yellow sheet that I distributed to you, which is just a very brief overview of how capital construction, which is to say the new facilities or improvements to existing facilities of higher education, how this activity is funded. And I've broken this down into four primary funding sources, which you'll keep hearing these terms come back over the next couple of days. The first is general fund, and of course that just means state general fund. But the general fund, there's very little general fund actually in the capital construction budget as a portion of the total cost of constructing and renovating facilities. General fund is usually, when it is in the capital construction budget, combined with Article 11G bonds, which I'll talk about next. But before really getting into the details, general fund has very rarely been used for capital construction in the recent past. In the recent past, the facilities that higher education has constructed has been almost entirely done without any general fund support at all. There have been some exceptions recently. There was a library that was constructed at the Western Oregon University, which had some general fund. There are no projects, Mr. Upadhyay will be talking immediately following me about what's in the governor's budget, there are no projects in the governor's budget this time that have any general fund support to pay for them, with one exception, and that is the general fund has also been combined with Article 11G bonds to finance academic modernization and repair, including deferred maintenance costs. These are the ongoing costs of keeping the buildings up to par and keeping them and modernizing them for current instructional technology. And there is general fund and Article 11G bonds in the budget for that purpose. Since I've been talking so much about Article 11G bonds, let me explain what they are. These are bonds that are permitted or authorized by Article 11G of the state constitution. So that's how they get their name. And they may be used to construct or repair academic facilities at the Oregon University System or at community colleges. So these are used to construct classrooms, laboratories, academic offices, and libraries, things, facilities of that nature. And the constitution requires that for each dollar of bonds that is issued, there must be a dollar match of general fund appropriation to finance a project. So you can't entirely finance a project with Article 11G bonds. If it's a $10 million project, you have to put in at least $5 million of general fund to be matched by $5 million of these bonds. What has been happening in recent biennia is that, again, as I mentioned previously, general fund has not been provided for projects, for capital construction projects, as a general rule in recent times. Instead, though, the legislature has allowed other funds to be used as additional 11G match. So even though the Constitution says it has to be general fund, the legislature has, as I I've gotten around this. I'm not saying that in a negative note, but has essentially allowed donations, grants, other types of funding for higher ed to be deposited into the general fund and then to be used to meet constitutional match. So while it's not part of the general fund we're using to try to balance the budget, it does legally become general fund and then is used to match Article 11G bonds. The governor, well, we'll talk, Mr. Patio will talk more about what's in the governor's budget, but another thing that's important to note about these Article 11G bonds is that once they are issued, the debt service on them, which would typically last for 30 years or perhaps 20 years, these are paid by the general fund. In fact, in the current biennium, there are debt service payments equal, you know, these debt service payments equal about $26 million on the bonds that have already been issued in prior biennia. And you've already approved funding this when you approved the parts of the community college and higher ed budgets that you looked at, because the actual debt service is in the operating budgets. And you can see there about $21.5 million in this budget and $4.4 million with community colleges. Finally, the Constitution limits the amount of Article 11G bonds that may be issued. It's based on the total, basically the total value of taxable property in the state. The amount of bonds that are issued that are outstanding of about $90 million is well short of this limitation. So this limitation is not, you know, a binding limitation to this legislature. There's the Constitution itself would allow a huge increase. A separate type of bond, which is authorized by Article 11F1 of the Constitution, is very different than Article 11G bonds. It's also a general obligation bond, which means that the interest rates that can be gotten on these are quite favorable because the state is obligated to pay the debt service if other revenue sources fail. But for an Article 11 F1 bond, these are not financed. Debt service is not paid by the general fund. Instead, there's some other source of funding, and there are a number of sources of funding that are used. But first of all, they're basically used to construct facilities relating to the auxiliary activities of higher ed. So typically, 11F1 bonds have been used to construct things such as student housing and dining facilities, parking, conference centers, sports facilities, student unions, health care and child care facilities, and typically facilities not directly in an academic function such as a classroom or a library or an academic office. The debt service payments on these bonds generally come out of the campus budgets themselves for these auxiliaries. So for a dormitory, they would use dormitory fees to pay the bonds. There are some, and you'll see later on, for the facilities relating to student facilities, the Article 11 F1 bonds are generally paid by the student building fee, which you'll have more discussion on later because the second item on your agenda today would allow that fee to be increased. But these are not paid back by the general fund. And finally, there are other revenues, including gifts, grants, capital reserves, federal and local government revenue. They're also used in certain occasions to construct the facilities in higher education. The only final thing I'd like to say before turning this over is to talk a little bit about what the emergency board's function is in capital construction. The emergency board typically will end up considering a number of capital construction projects that are not in the budget as presented to the regular legislative session because the facilities were not anticipated at that time or the financing for them was not in order at the time of the legislative session. The emergency board, because it has the same authority as the legislature to approve capital projects, does approve these projects during the interim. And in other cases, it reviews projects if the legislature sets up certain conditions that must be met before the project can proceed.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Yes, Senator True.
Does the E-Board have the authority itself to have the bonds issued?
Senator and members, the legislature must pass during the session, during each session, a bill that authorizes a dollar limit on the amount of bonds that can be issued during during that legislative session. So there is another bill, House Bill 2276 or something, I forget the exact number, I apologize, that does that. What the emergency board may do is authorize new projects as long as that would not result in more bonds being issued than the limitation.
Yes, Satish, you're on.
Good afternoon, Chair Hartung and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, here to talk to you about the governor's recommended budget for the Department of Higher Education's capital construction program. You should have two pieces of handout in front of you. One is the regular budget and management presentation handout, and the second one is two pages, and this lists the various projects. If you turn to page two of the first budget and management handout, you will see that the governor's recommended budget, this is the printed budget, the budget that came out in December, has $209 million total funds for capital construction for the Department of Higher Education. The budget has $12.1 million general fund. If you look at the pie chart on the next page, you can see the various components of the budget. 80% of the capital construction budget is funded with Article 11F bonds, and Steve talked to you about what Article 11F bonds are. 8.4% of the budget is funded with other funds. This includes gifts, grants, and also sometimes federal funds that the department receives. 5.8% of the budget is funded with Article 11G bonds, and the remaining 5.8% is funded with general fund. And the general fund has to match the 11G bonds, bond proceeds, so that's why it's the equal amount. Going on to page four, I would like to tell you what principle we used when developing the governor's budget. What we did is basically approved all the projects that the department requested that did not require additional general fund. Yeah. And the recommended budget is 11.3% less than the 1991-2001 legislatively approved budget, and it basically does three things. It provides $12.1 million general fund and $27.1 million other funds from sale of Article 11F and Article 11G bonds for academic modernization and repairs. As Steve mentioned earlier, general fund is only provided for academic modernization and repairs. This is just like deferred maintenance. And this is the same amount, the $12.1 million general fund is the same amount of general fund that was provided for academic modernization and repairs during the current biennium. The budget provides $149.9 million other funds from the sale of Article 11F1 bonds and $17.2 million other funds from gifts and grants for 38 new projects. And the projects are listed here on the first sheet of the other handout. It also provides $2.7 million other funds for project reserves. Let me now walk you through the development of the budget starting from the 1999-2001 legislatively adopted budget. The 99-01 legislatively adopted budget had $142.6 million total funds, of which $15.9 million was general fund. The emergency board, to April of 2000, increased this by $93.2 million other funds. I'm on page 5 of the presentation document. And there were phase-outs of one-time construction, capital construction costs. There was a phase-out of $3.8 million general fund and $3.8 million other funds that was used to finance the Western Oregon University Library. And also there was phase-out of all capital construction projects. All capital construction projects are phased-out at the end of the biennium, so the current service level is zero. The only thing that's different here is the $12.1 million general fund was shifted to education and general budget. This was so that the department would not lose this money. This was a decision that was made a few biennia ago by the legislature so that the department could continue to get the $12.1 million general fund for academic modernization and repairs. Under the policy packages, you'll find that it's a little over $196 million of new capital construction projects under Package 180. And under Package 445, you will find that the $12.1 million that was moved to the operating budget is moved back to be matched with the Article 11G bond revenues. So with that, we have the total budget. Just before the agency's hearings with regards to its operating budget, the agency requested some technical adjustments. On the basis of that, we added $16.2 million other funds from the sale of Article 11F bonds and an additional $45.4 million other funds for six new projects and academic modernization and repair. And you can find that on the second page of the other handout. With that, we have a governor's revised budget of $270.6 million total fund, and this is a 29.5% more than the recommended budget. And now the department will be talking to you about the different projects in detail.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Miller.
Thank you. Satish, would you go back on that page 5 entry about the $12 million that kind of moved underneath the shells from one pot to another?
Yeah.
Tell me what's going on there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, the $12.1 million is for academic repair and modernization. This is the fund. In other budgets, you will find this under for deferred maintenance, and you'll find it on the operating budget. Actually, it's not. You won't find this under capital construction. In the case of the Department of Higher Education, the general fund is needed to provide a one-to-one match for the G-bond.
Oh.
This was a decision that the legislature made, I believe, in 95, during the 95 session, to allow the Department of Higher Education to use the funds that are for deferred maintenance to be matched with the G-bond. So to be matched with the G-bond, it has to be part of the capital construction bill. That's why you see this being moved out and moved in again. And the reason why it's moved out under the current service level adjustment is because capital construction budget, there's no current service level budget for capital construction, is zeroed
right
out. So if we move it to the operating budget, it gets saved.
And these were not unexpended funds?
Senator Miller, these are not unexpended funds.
All right.
This is something
you
that the department needs for deferred maintenance.
Sure. Senator Trove.
We sort of settled on the $12 million. That doesn't roll up. There's no inflationary increase or no estimate that says higher ed has more facilities over time. It needs more money for maintenance.
Mr. Chair,
is the same.
Senator Trove, this time there was no inflation provided for.
Sometimes there is.
Sometimes. In the previous biennium, there was inflation provided, but this time
that money, even though it's in the budget, doesn't roll up. There's no inflationary increase.
There is no inflationary increase this time.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Joe Cox, please.
I ask Mr. Karen to wait just a moment, and I'll quickly exit that.
Okay.
Coming past those suspiciously large oysters out there today coming in, I think they're from the Chesapeake Bay, Senator, and I've never seen anything quite that big here. So my proposal to you initially was I would get my sailboat over to the river and we would all held a hearing out there, but we have too many people testifying, and so it wouldn't work. But it was difficult to come past them, I have to tell you.
Maybe those were really terrapins, though.
Yes, sir, that's an old wound.
Yeah.
Next year. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Joe Cox, the Chancellor of the University System, and I'm here today just briefly to introduce this subject. Just four or five points of background. Enrollments are at an all-time high and are projected to continue growing into the future. Also, the complexity of our business intensifies, and changes and capital projects that you're going to hear about reflect that. When I got into this business a long time ago, we used to talk about chalk and talk buildings. My background is in history and political science, and that's what we needed. Blackboard and a library and turn us loose. There are no buildings anymore that are just chalk and talk. Technology has changed everything and almost everything that we teach and everything that we do. As Linda Swanson is going to show you, our capital stock is aging and needs both modernization, repair, and replacement. Once again, we bring you a capital request which has no general fund, or very little general fund. Our projects are heavily leveraged, and we will, if you approve this request, do our very best to self-finance these projects as we've done in the past. But I want to leave you with this worry. There are projects that we will not be able to self-finance. They're not all necessarily the sort that can attract the donations to name it in honor of Aunt Mildred. We're going to need to build, for example, waste treatment facilities. No one's going to give us money to name that for Aunt Mildred. I'm being a little bit humorous and flip, but I know you know this. We continue to put off on the replacement deferred maintenance list growing number of buildings. And at some point we will confront that, and I believe I will suggest to you that we're going to have to do it in the same way that K-12 and the community colleges do, and that's where we'll be. So with that, may I introduce Linda Swanson, who is our Director of Capital Projects and Planning, and she and Mr. Kerens will take you along with our folks from the institutions through the various projects. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Joe. Linda, welcome. Grattan. Identify yourself.
For the record, Grattan Sharon is Director of Government Relations for the Oregon University System. My role here is to take any questions which Linda wishes to field to me that you ask her, and also to act as timekeeper. We've got a complex presentation to make today, and to give you a little overview, for about 20 or 25 minutes, we're going to, Linda will commence the overview of the capital construction budget. That would be Senate Bill 5525. Leadership, legislative leadership, has directed, I think requested of the Chancellor, and he's responded to that request by asking for a review of each of the top projects on each campus. And we have responded to that request. So following Linda's beginning of the presentation, then we will have the folks in the audience will make a presentation on each of their top projects as introduced by Linda. Then at about 2:25, 2:30, we're going to stop. There are some witnesses here to address Senate Bill 327, which is the student building fee. And then tomorrow, Linda and I would return to complete the overview and then questions about it before you begin your work session. So with that.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Linda Swanson. I'm the Director of Capital Construction in the Oregon University System. Seated behind me are representatives from the campuses as well as from the Chancellor's office. And as Grattan has explained, at a certain point, about a quarter to two, I will cease the discussion of the general budget and one at a time request each campus to bring forward the representative it chooses to assist me in presenting each campus's number one project. With that proviso, we will start our discussion today. Those of you who were present during the operating...
Linda, are we working off of this now?
I apologize. In the blue expandable binder, you will see a copy of the slide presentation. There actually should be two in there. The first one, the thicker one, says the 200103 capital budget. There is also one we will be using later for the student building fee discussion, SB 327. Just also in your packet are some, I hope, helpful things. Tables of contents that you might want to put just before the final tab in your white binder to help you locate any individual projects with further descriptions. I provided them sorted both by campus and by the way the agency thinks of these projects, which is by board priority. I've also included a summary document which describes each campus's long-range plan in a few pages per campus. It was provided to the Board of Higher Ed last June, and you might want to refer to it at some point. Those of you who were present during the operating budget hearings, which I believe was everyone, heard the discussion that I presented at that time concerning how energy costs and debt service costs were being illustrated or were showing up in the operating budget. Some of what I presented there I will just briefly review again here. But the scope will basically cover our 10-year capital program strategy, because this time, unlike many biennia, the Oregon University System undertook a number of extensive studies and prepared in its 6-year plan a complete statement of all the needs identified, including project narratives for every project on every campus. So it was unusually extensive. Of course, I won't be going over that today, but I will highlight it. Then I will be discussing the governor's capital budget with technical adjustments and certain other small adjustments which we made with Mr. Bender and Mr. Upadhyay just prior to this session, and then a summary. Slide 4, please. As I'm sure you are aware, the Oregon University System is really a huge enterprise, more than 17.5 million square feet. We are 50% of all the facilities which the state of Oregon owns. There is a current replacement value of those buildings of $3 billion. I mention that because throughout much of this conversation, I will be referring to CRV, or current replacement value, as an index of asset management. There are 100,000 students who are being taught in our facilities throughout any given year. We are large, we are complex, and we really are more similar to municipalities than we are to a single state office building complex. Thus, we have, besides the academic facilities one normally thinks of, classrooms and laboratories and libraries, we have power plants. We have underground utility tunnels to maintain. We have road systems. We have athletic fields, museums, and we operate every day of the year. Next, please. As the chancellor indicated, we are experiencing the highest enrollments in about 30 years. This is true nationwide. We have an extensive amount of deferred maintenance or deferred repairs, which I will be discussing. Also, mounting concerns regarding the lack of current code compliance in our buildings. Our classrooms and teaching laboratories have not been modernized generally in about 30 years. And these basic needs are in competition for dollars to support our expanding missions and new facilities needs associated with growth. We, in fact, need to recapitalize the Oregon University System. That is why I provided the little gray book for you in case you have any extra sleepless moments. You could peruse that and get a sense of the extent to which campus after campus, in category after category, is facing a fundamental need to recapitalize. In fact, in our campus master plan study, we identified $2 billion in current dollars of needs. We have not been able to meet that level of need, even though we have leveraged state funds very seriously, and I hope to be able to illustrate that in this conversation. We have strong gift support from our donor community. We also employ debt to cover our needs. Map 6 should be familiar, a map of the state of Oregon and where our major campus sites are located. Next, please. Steve walked you through the types of facilities and how they are funded, so I don't want to repeat that. But just to point out, 2/3 of our space is basic academic or academic support space, what we call education and general space, 2/3. It's 11 or 12 million gross square feet, and it's the only category supported by the state. Then there are two types of auxiliaries, as Steve mentioned, what we call traditional auxiliaries of housing and dining and parking and athletics, and student auxiliaries supported by the student building fee, which will have its own discussion. Slide 8 gives you more detail about Ed in general, slide 9 about traditional auxiliaries, and slide 10 about the students. But let's just go to slide 11 for a moment. I presented this slide during the operating budget hearing. It's just a quick way to remind ourselves of the structure of higher ed and how each of these facilities categories is represented, which are eligible for state funds, what kinds of facilities they are, which are eligible for G or F bonds, which are eligible for general fund. If we might then go to the next slide, we will start the 0107 capital construction program. I'm starting with a higher level so that I can build the background for you for the eventual presentation of the 0103 budget. The board has adopted certain goals for the capital construction program. They are: protect the state's capital assets, optimize our buildings, and in particular for our instructional space, teaching facilities, increase our ability to meet growth both physically and through improved distance education, leverage the state funds you have generously provided, and develop the capital budget so that it does support the board's priorities in the operating budget. This is a change from previous years, and what we are trying to present today and tomorrow will be illustrating how each of the board's priorities, 1, 2, 3, and 4, were supported by specific capital needs. Next, please.
Linda, excuse me. The bottom bullet on that, develop capital budget to support operating budget priorities.
Yes.
Explain that to me.
In the 3 weeks or so of the Oregon University System operating budget, you were presented with priorities requests from the board in order of their priority, current service level being the first, for example. What we developed in the capital budget, which we'll be going over, is for each of those sets of priorities, for example, quality faculty and facilities was the second priority, we identified a group of projects that would support that. The third priority...
An example of a project.
I'll be happy to. The principal topic of today's presentation is on how to achieve quality facilities, the board's priority number two, which will be a discussion of the half billion dollars that has developed as a backlog of deferred maintenance throughout our system. It represents 10 or 12 years of unfunded repairs, and it has become so very large that it has risen in the board's priority right after protecting the current service level, which, although we don't have one in the capital budget, the $12 million that you provide in the general fund serves in our sort of operating definition as CSL. Okay. Does that help?
That does.
In order to provide a complete and comprehensive evaluation of how we are going to meet the board's goals, we undertook 4 studies. We completed the deferred maintenance study and the capital repair, and you may have read about it earlier this year when it was covered extensively in newspapers across the state. We also took a look at our teaching space to verify that we were using it robustly. We completed the 10-year reviews on each campus of a completely updated master plan, or if a campus had recently done such a thing, a revisiting of essential facilities needs. And we investigated new financing strategies, realizing that the way we have been financing our facilities is falling short. We are still working on those alternatives.
Excuse me, Linda, the status of facilities. 4 comprehensive studies undertaken.
Yes.
Now, who undertook those studies?
The facilities office and each campus. We had, in the first case, it was a year and a half study where we, and I could go into detail about this.
Don't need to know.
The space utilization was about a 9-month investigation because we developed some new software in order to better get a handle on that. The 10-year campus master plans, every 10 years, the board requires our campuses to come forward with new plans, and that those take about 2 years to complete. Mm-hmm. The first goal, protect the state's assets. Our study illuminated some pretty complex and central issues for us. 40% of our square footage was built in 15 years. This is not true only in Oregon, it's true nationally. The baby boom effect, which I am a product. And the Oregon University System buildings are now aging at that same rate and in that same way. So 20, 30, 40 years after construction, they need replacement of major building systems. The ones that you would ordinarily do in your home, the roof, the electrical, the plumbing, the heating and cooling and ventilating, the windows, the cladding on the facade. These things have a definite lifespan after which they no longer operate effectively, and in much of our building space has reached that age. The next slide is an illustration of that, looking at the histogram that shows in 5 and 10 year increments how much space we added. The color slide will show you how much of that space was housing and dining services, how much was athletic facilities, how much was student building fee, that's what the fee refers to, and how much was Ed in General. You can see we built a lot of Ed in General before we built our first housing, for example. And over time, there were, as far as I can tell, about 4 major spurts of growth. Coinciding with population changes after the war in 1945 was another such spurt, and we are now facing another one. Next slide, please. The specific technical definition, which are important for us to understand in this conversation, is that every year a certain percentage of all the things that go up to make a building system comes due for replacement. That's based on the age of the equipment and the extent to which it has received good, appropriate, routine maintenance, which is not funded in the capital budget. That's funded in the operating budget. When that capital repair, when that roof is not replaced after 20 years, or that electrical system is corroded and not replaced, it falls into a state that's called deferred maintenance. These are very precise definitions because they're the numbers that go along with them have to meet a certain criterion. So when capital repair is not done, it falls into deferred maintenance, and then if it is not funded, eventually something happens. We have a breakdown, we have an emergency repair, or we have to close a building. We have examples of all of that on our campuses. I'm going to stop for the moment and ask Mr. Brian Chase, the director of the physical plant and auxiliary services at Portland State, to speak to you just for a minute or two about how the situation works itself out at Portland State.
Mr. Chairman, I have two pictures that I can show. And one is a picture of a specimen from Lincoln Hall, which used to be the main high school for the Portland Public Schools until they abandoned it and moved to the university.
Excuse me, would you please identify yourself on one of the mics for the record?
My name is Brian Chase. I'm the director of facilities for Portland State University.
Picture on the left looks good there. I played basketball in that very room when I was at Jefferson High School. Yeah, that is. That's the hole in the back.
Duck work with his basketball falling off of it. And what I'm here to tell you is that's not my biggest problem. When we look at Portland State University, it has a backlog of $100 million in deferred maintenance, and each year we spend less than $2 million trying to fix those problems. We have to put the money where it will do the most good. So that picture shows asbestos that is wrapping around a duct. It was located up in the attic where my maintenance people typically don't go, and there's no public access. The money I have to spend on things to keep the operation running. The number one priority is to keep the academic mission going. So that room's locked off and labeled, stay out of it. Where I do spend the money is to make sure the electrical system in Lincoln Hall works. Because if I don't keep the electric running, then I can't have classes. So we put the money where it'll do the most amount of good. But the reality is there's a deterioration factor that goes on, and there's this constant pressure that we get from the city that says, bring your buildings up to code. Over the last few years, on the other campuses, you see the trend where the different municipalities come in and tell people,
wait, what are you talking about? Okay, I'll do that. Sorry. They'll come forward and say, you have to spend money. If you're going to spend money on your electrical system, we also will require you to spend 25% of your money to bring your building up to ADA codes, as well as we want you to do these other things, and you must agree to do that. I have several buildings where the city of Portland has said, if we're going to allow you to make improvements, you must correct all your deficiencies in the next 5 years. Those typically add up to tens of millions of dollars. You know, I am not getting enough money to take care of the things I need to fix, much less take care of the things the city wants to do. And I think if you look at OSU, U of O, you'll see the same kinds of problems exist. The other picture I have is showing a classroom. This happens to be an art classroom, and you see the faculty members standing around a folding table with some art examples and the students gathered around. The most important thing in education is the relationship with the teacher to the students. There's nothing wrong with having an inadequate facility if the teacher's doing things wrong or doing things right, if he's teaching well. The trouble you get with a picture like this is that the classroom that he'd normally go to, take the students out of the studio, say, now let's go look at some slides and pictures on the wall so students get a better idea, that room's being used. As you saw in some of the numbers, we're at 100% capacity, especially in the day. At PSU, 40% of our classes are taught at night. We don't have empty classrooms. They're being used. We've seen a 5, 6% a year growth, and we haven't added classrooms. So we're always juggling. And the fact that you run into is if you see a few percent of the classrooms are sitting empty, a lot of times they're not adequate classrooms. They're not being used or are inappropriate for that teaching method, which makes the quality of your teaching suffer. So anyway, the point I want to make is that those are big numbers that you see. But the numbers get worse and they mean things. There are things that aren't being fixed that should be fixed. And if we don't deal with it, we will be closing buildings. Eventually, something will break, like an electrical system, or some other catastrophe will occur that will force us to close classrooms and buildings. So instead of talking about making progress, we'll actually go back. And that's the reality, because many of these problems, like asbestos, were identified 10 years ago, and funds haven't been put into. And it's true in just about every area you see, and it's true about every campus in the state.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, we will curtail the discussion of the general capital budget and move to that section, which on your slide will be page 19 or slide 37. As Grattan explained, we were asked to present a few moments for each campus to explain its number one project. We will start with Eastern Oregon University. Bruce Shepherd, the provost of Eastern, will kindly join me. In each case, I will run through one or two slides and then ask the representative from the campus to speak for a moment. The Eastern Oregon University Science Center is that campus's number one priority. It is a facility that is absolutely essential for growth of this campus, which sees programs that would be housed in this facility as the locus of most of its enrollment growth, natural sciences related. The proposal is to remodel about 25,000 square feet of activity space in the existing building, moving out of the old building all of the 30-year-old labs that no longer meet appropriate code or any other requirement, and build a new science wing, which would primarily be a laboratory wing. There, that would make it possible to remodel the existing Badgley Hall. The funding for this facility, next slide, as currently, it's a little different from what you'll see in the governor's budget because, you know, it's a moving target as the project gets worked on. The current request would call for $12 million of Article 11G bonds and $12 million of general fund, with private fundraising close to $3 million. The Eastern subtotal of that then is about $26.5 million. Oregon Health Sciences University is discussing the possibility of adding some facility space in a new facility there with their funding, bringing that total up. In addition, Eastern is fundraising for things such as basic classroom equipment, smart classroom technology and other things which Bruce can explain.
Thank you. Senator Hartung, other honorable members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Shepard, provost at Eastern Oregon University. You should have before you a document that provides a series of slides on the project. I will just talk about a few of those slides. Some others may raise questions in your mind that you'd like to ask about. We would certainly welcome that. I would start with just 30 seconds of background on why we are here with the Science Center proposal, and it has to do with our response to your directives to higher education and as we entered this current biennium, and that is to provide access with quality to higher education. There's been dramatic response throughout the state system to that charge. At Eastern, it has been to see an increase in enrollment that is the largest percentage each year of the within the Oregon University system. We've also responded to the quality issue. You'll find that Oregon, that Eastern Oregon University is a number 4 ranked Western public regional liberal arts college in the United States by U.S. News and World Reports. That puts us in the very top ranking by that particular organization. We've also seen, well, we already have a large distance education operation, a 25% increase per year in this biennium in distance education. As we then turn to our primary challenge, as we look to how can we carry forward this direction from the legislature, and it's embedded in the new approach to funding of higher education to increase access with quality. Our primary challenge, and we've known this is coming for quite a while, is in our ability to support the science programs and the applied programs that depend upon science facilities. We have very limited ability to increase our enrollment because all of our chemistry and biology labs are now at capacity, meeting in the evenings and on the weekends. We see that our partner programs with Oregon State University and Oregon Health Sciences University are at capacity as well. These are programs that put a significant impact on science facilities. Our response has been to propose the Science Center building, which has a number of advantages. It meets the needs not just of Eastern Oregon University, but of our partner